The oldest member.
Listen to the tale of a stalwart male who lost his well-known natty. Donald was his name, and golf was the game that made him gray like his granny. He practiced much, but...
Maurice Denham, as the oldest member, tells another tale by P.G. Wodehouse. Today, The Rough Stuff.
...were nothing else than dirty. In the locker room every night, he'd sing of his awful plight. Oh, the dirty little Bill went rolling down the hill and rolled right into a bunker. From there to the green...
Prior's Heath Golf Club in the 30s. It's a rainy afternoon, and in the corner of the smoking room, the oldest member is listening to the views of one of his younger colleagues.
My fiancée is a dear girl, but when I see her playing golf, well, I can't help thinking that a woman's place is in the home.
Now, pour me a little more tea, Hobbs, there's a good chap. I think I could manage another slice of seed cake.
Righty-ho, yes, of course.
Thank you. Now, you were saying, you feel that lovely woman loses in queenly dignity when she fools us an easy pot?
Well, I don't mind her mishitting. Happens to us all. My objection is, she doesn't care. She's too light-hearted about the whole thing.
Ah, but that may cloak her deeper feelings. The noblest woman I ever knew laughed merrily whenever she muffed a shot, but I later learned that once in the privacy of her own home, she would weep bitterly and bite great holes in the sofa.
By Jove, did she?
Yeah, she wore a mask in public, you see, concealed her grief. It's a fine spirit for a woman.
Yes, well, I'm afraid that's not the case with Geraldine. She remains extremely flippant about the whole thing.
Oh, she'll learn, my boy, she'll learn. And you must teach her. I believe that much good may come of men and women playing golf together. I mean, take the case of Ramsden Wood.
Ramsden Wood? Where's that?
It's not a where, it's a who.
Oh.
Ramsden Wood was a distinguished member of this club till a few years ago, when he and his family moved to Devon. There's a notable drawing of him in our rogues' gallery.
Oh, you mean the caricatures on the wall?
Yeah, precisely. Let me show you. Is there any more seed cake?
I'm afraid not.
Ah, all right, well, now, let me show you the picture of Ramsden Wood. I'll be glad to stretch my legs.
Yes, yes, by all means.
Well, then, amusing stuff, don't you think? You know, all these caricatures were done by that artist fellow, Mortimer.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's very clever. Very clever. If ever I try to draw anyone, they always end up looking like the Kaiser.
Well, Mortimer usually gets his subjects to a T. He did all the members in 1930, and he caught their characters exactly. Do you see this one of George McIntosh? The man's innate stupidity comes across wonderfully. Ah, there's young Bingham, ruthlessly determined to win everything.
He's made this chap look awfully shifty.
Ah, yes, Arthur Froggatt. Well, he was shifty. Ran off last year with a publican's wife. Yes, Mortimer got them all just as they are. But his one failure, I think, is this one. Of me. I mean, there's no resemblance at all.
Ah.
I don't know why the committee let it stay here. It's a travesty.
Perhaps the artist was tired.
However, all the others are quite excellent.
Certainly a fine collection.
And yet, do you know, many of the subjects fool themselves that their pictures are quite unlike them? Ah, well... Would some power the gifty gears to see yourselves as the seers?
Very true, sir.
Ah, now, then, here's the chap I want to show you. This is Ramsden Wood.
Ah. Yes. It's not exactly an oil painting, is it?
Oh, no. I think the fellow just used pen and ink. Now, as you can see, Wood couldn't claim to be a good-looking chap. And furthermore, he hadn't the gift of the gab, but thanks to golf, he finished up marrying the best-looking girl who ever set foot on these links. Apart from your fiancé, of course. No, I'm talking of years gone by. Let's sit down again, and I'll tell you the story.
Well, thank you, sir, but I thought you wanted to stretch your legs.
Well, that's long enough now. No, sit down, sit down. This bears on the subject of women and golf, which were you discussing? Let me see. Ramsden Wood joined this club about, 10 years ago. And when I said he hadn't the gift of the gab, it was like saying Nero wasn't too hot on fire precautions. The truth is, the poor chap was tongue-tied, especially with members of the opposite sex.
Poor devil.
Wood's idea of conversation was to perspire, tie himself in knots, and produce a sort of gurgling sound. If ever he managed a coherent remark, it was always concerning the weather, and he'd immediately apologize and qualified.
How did the girls react?
Oh, all the local females simply regarded Ramsden Wood as an unfortunate incident, one to be ignored. Finally, after many failed attempts at social life, Wood gave up and became a sort of hermit. His only solace was golf. He played morning, noon, and night, invariably on his own, for he was too shy to seek a partner. And then, one day, there occurred the event which was to change his life. Ramsden Wood had placed the ball on the first tee and drawn back his club for a mighty drive when, from behind him, there came that noise which for some reason is described in low company as a raspberry. Wood's club wobbled as it came down, propelling the ball into the trees, and Wood, not best pleased, turned to perceive a small, fat boy in a sailor suit standing close beside him. The child seemed to be making a rude face, though Wood later learned that this was the way his features had been naturally arranged. And more to the point, behind the boy, a young woman was moving gracefully and languidly towards him. A girl of such beauty that Ramsden's heart looped the loop twice in rapid succession. His mouth dried up and his vocal cords got into their usual tangle. Yet, as we shall see, for once he was eventually able to utter real words.
Good morning. I'm afraid my little brother spoiled your stroke. How do you do? I'm Eunice Bray, and this is my brother Wilberforce. He has a lively sense of humour, as you can hear. We're new to the neighbourhood, and Wilberforce adores watching golf.
Perhaps you'd care to walk right round with me.
Well, that's very kind of you. I'm sure Wilberforce would love to. I know he'll enjoy watching you play. The thing is, he wasn't able to go to the circus last week, and this will make up for it. I'll leave him with you, then. If anyone wants me, I'll be on the terrace with my book.
I never got full details of that morning's round from Ramsden Wood. If you mentioned it, he winced and changed the subject. But he did manage to pump Wilberforce for information. He learned that Eunice and the boy were staying with an aunt who lived locally. Eunice was not engaged to be married, and the aunt's hobby was collecting seaweed, which she pressed and pasted in an album. You know, sometimes one thinks that aunts live entirely for pleasure. At the end of the round, Wood returned the child to its sister on the terrace, tripping over his feet as he did so. Eunice thanked him without looking up from her book, and that concluded his first encounter with the girl of his dreams. I need hardly tell you that from then on the poor fellow was enslaved. And, of course, his cause seemed hopeless. The instant Eunice Bray appeared in Prior's Heath, every eligible bachelor for miles tossed his head with a loud snort and galloped in her direction. Dashing young devils they were, with the faces and figures of Greek gods and the silver tongue of Lloyd George. Against them, what chance was there for Ramsden Wood with his unshuffled face and the self-assertion of a pink blancmange? And I was not surprised when Wood unburdened himself to me one evening in the bar. He was sitting alone, as usual, and it seemed only charitable to let him buy me a whisker and soda.
I got a double. Is that all right?
Oh, that's most generous, my dear chap.
Soda?
No, I'll do it, thank you. Mustn't drown it.
I don't know why. It might be glad to be drowned. I would.
Oh, come, come. What are you saying? You're young and fit and your life is before you.
What's the point of life if Eunice Bray won't look at me?
Oh, dear me. Does she not receive callers?
She does indeed. Hundreds of them. She holds court at our aunt's house every evening. I can't even get a seat in the back row.
Tricky.
In fact, most of the time I'm stuck with the aunt.
A charming lady, so I've heard.
Possibly. But she only wants to talk about seaweed. I couldn't know more about seaweed if I were a deep-sea haddock.
Wood's sole consolation was that no other suitors seemed to be making progress either. And so matters went on till one day Eunice decided to take up golf. I gather she did this simply because her friend Kitty Manders, whom she cordially disliked, had accidentally won a small silver cup in a ladies' contest. All the other players had been so heavily handicapped that if Miss Manders hadn't won, the prize must surely have gone to her Pekingese dog. In spite of the absurd background to her win, the Manders girl constantly brought all conversations round to the subject of her trophy. Eunice was being upstaged, so she decided to take up the game herself. There was, of course, no shortage of young men eager to instruct the fair Eunice in the game of games. She did not ask for lessons from Ramsden Wood. For one thing, she never supposed that so poor-spirited a man could be any good at the game. And for another, poor Ramsden was always busy tooling around with little Wilberforce, the one favour Eunice allowed him. And then fickle fate played a remarkable trick. Eunice, by now, felt sufficiently skilled to put her name in the hat for the annual mixed foursomes. And whom should you draw as partner but Ramsden Wood? The effect on Wood was electric. The mind of a man in love works in strange ways. To poor Ramsden, it appeared an act of God. It seemed to say that he and Eunice were meant to be partners in life, as well as on the links. And believe it or not, the same night their names were joined on the notice board, the poor goof went round and proposed. But it wasn't easy, of course. He had to endure a long lecture from the aunt on the subject of bladder rack before he could join the crowd in the inner sanctum. And once there, it was some time before he managed to get Eunice alone on the pretext of discussing the match. He then coughed 11 times in a strangled sort of way, cleared his throat twice, and finally blurted out his suggestion that wedding bells were appropriate. Eunice Bray was more startled than angry.
Of course, I'm extremely flattered, Mr.
Wood. Ramsden Wood.
Of course, yes, Mr. Wood. Obviously, this is a great compliment.
Not at all.
A great compliment.
No, really.
I wish you wouldn't interrupt. I don't like to keep repeating myself. It is a great compliment, but I'm afraid it's quite impossible.
Just as you say, of course.
After all, what have you to offer me? I don't mean money. I mean something more spiritual. What is there in you, Mr. Walters?
Wood, actually.
Mr. Wood, what is there in you to make a girl give up the priceless boon of freedom?
I know a lot about dried seaweed.
No. As I said, it is quite impossible. You have paid me the greatest compliment a man can pay a woman, Mr. Good.
Wood, I'll write it down for you.
Please don't trouble. I'm afraid we shall never meet again.
But we're partners in the mixed foursomes tomorrow.
Oh, yes, so we are. Well, mind you, play up. I want to win a cup more than anything else on earth.
If only I could win what I want more than anything else on earth. If only I could... If only I could win you, Miss Bray,
Wood's tongue had tied itself in a knot round his uvula. He stumbled to the door, paused with his fingers on the handle for one last look back, and then walked silently into the cupboard where Aunt Maud kept a collection of seaweed. Wood was not without intelligence, and he perceived his mistake quite quickly. He left the cupboard with a nervous laugh, tripped over the doorstop, and finally made a successful exit through the room door. Our tale now moves to the following day, the day of the Mixed Foursomes Contest, an event which I think you've not yet experienced. It seldom attracts a large entry. Many men are idealists and wish to retain their illusions of feminine perfection. And only 8 couples reported for duty that fateful day. Ramsden Wood and Eunice Bray were to play against Marcella Bingley and George Perkins, who were favourites to win the title. Perkins was an average player, but Bingley was something special. A sturdy, weather-beaten woman with bobbed hair and the wrists of a welterweight boxer. She drove a hard, clean shot off the first tee, and then she and Perkins moved off. Before addressing the ball, Wood felt it proper to make a rallying call to his troops. It may not have equaled Henry V's before Agincourt, but it was certainly a revelation. Out on the links, his attention focused on winning the match. The tongue-tied fool of last night was miraculously transformed into a lucid man of action.
What we have to do, Miss Bray, is play steadily. Don't try any fancy shots, no risks. Play for safety.
I am sure we shall both do our best, Mr. Wood.
And you, Wilberforce, kindly remember that this is a competition and keep your merry flow of conversation to yourself. We can't have you chattering when we're about to play.
If you think my brother will be in the way...
I don't mind him coming round as long as he keeps quiet. Right, I'll drive off first. We need a good start. Well then, good firm tee. Breeze from the left.
Ah! Good shot, partner. I said good shot, partner.
Yes, but don't talk. Rex concentration. And don't let me have to speak to you again.
Wilberforce? Wilberforce has been like a mouse.
Exactly. Mice make a beastly scratching noise, and that's what he was doing when I drove the ball.
He was only playing with the sand in the tee box.
Well, if he does it again, I shall be compelled to take steps.
Eunice gasped. She hadn't played enough golf to know that a genuine match can change a man's whole nature. She was still thinking of a crushing reply when Wood marched briskly off down the fairway. I will not detain you with details of the first 9 holes, for the focus of our story is on human foibles, not golfing technique, fascinating as that subject is. Suffice to say that Miss Bray played like a novice and Ramsden Wood like a master. In the other camp, the roles were reversed. George Perkins, clearly terrified of his partner, foozled and flunked, and Marcella Bingley played like Harry Varden, to whom, indeed, she bore a striking resemblance. Thus it was that they reached the halfway stage all square. Ramsden now broke his vow of silence to offer further advice to his partner.
Look here, we've made too many mistakes. I'm afraid you'll have to keep your brassy in the bag for the last 9 holes. Stick to the iron.
But Mr. Winklethorpe told me I was very good with the wooden clubs.
Yes, he likes his little joke.
I beg your pardon?
So far you've put us in 5 bunkers, 3 bushes, and halfway up a tree. You can't go on like that.
Mr. Wood! Really?
All this came as a great shock to Eunice, who had been accustomed to nothing but kind words from her coaches and partners. It's true, a few bolder spirits might have occasionally suggested that some players actually keep their eyes on the ball, and that she might play even more brilliantly if she tried it. Others may even have hinted that if she refrained from swaying her head like a lovely flower, her shots might be yet more perfect. But all these implied criticisms had been couched in gentle and diplomatic terms. And now, suddenly, she was confronted with the rough stuff.
The fact is, Miss Bray, I've had to get us out of trouble on every hole. It's not good enough.
You seem to forget, Mr. Wood, that I am just a beginner.
Hardly. I'm reminded at every stroke. Now, look, you want to win this match, don't you?
I've said so.
Right. Well, stick to the iron. Keep it straight. Never mind the distance.
Even off the tee?
Even off the tee. Keep it straight. Now, concentrate!
Eunice Bray's mind was in a whirl. She'd never been spoken to like this before. You might suppose she'd be full of resentment, and indeed there was fury on her lovely face. But deep inside, other feelings were stirring. All her life she'd been used to homage from men. And for all those feeble specimens who groveled before her, she felt nothing but scorn. Secretly she dreamed of the Bruce ruffians she read about in novels borrowed from the village circulating library. Beetle-browed, scowling heroes who rode wild horses, tamed the elements and treated women like dirt. Characters like Claude Delamere in The Man of Chilled Steel, who dragged Lady Matilda across the courtyard by her hair because she gave a rose to the Italian Count. Ramsden Wood, of course, hadn't yet entered the hair-dragging stakes, but he seemed to be heading that way. And a strange sensation of weakness and humility began to sweep over Eunice Bray. In practical terms, her play improved, and she and Wood might well have built a commanding lead had there not been a similar boost in George Perkins' game. Perhaps he'd received similar admonition from Miss Bingley. Anyway, he now played carefully and made few mistakes, with the result that the couples reached the final hole on level terms. Marcella Bingley was the first to play, and smacked a perfect drive hard and high down the fairway. The ball landed on the green within easy reach of the pin, a certain hole in two which even George Perkins couldn't foozle. Ramsden Wood needed to match her shot to survive. Now, bear in mind that for 3 hours he'd been extricating the ball from various traps into which his partner had put it, and this had taken its toll. Remember also that Wilberforce, though carefully silent, had eyed his every move with quiet malice. The fact is, Wood was under pressure. He placed the ball on the tee, took a deep breath, swung his club, and sliced the ball sideways into the lake. For a moment there was an awful silence, and then it was broken by a familiar but unwelcome sound. Wood turned. He was confronted by the sight of Wilberforce, who, having delivered his verdict on the shot, was bending over the tee-box and about to make mud pies. The spectacle of his trouser seat was one which calmer men would have found it hard to resist. To Ramsden Wood, it seemed to constitute a formal invitation. For a moment, his number 11 golf shoe, as supplied to leading professionals, was drawn back, and then it crashed home.
Oh! How dare you kick my brother!
Madam, in similar circumstances, I would have kicked the Archangel Gabriel.
He's landed in the stinging nettles.
I believe you will find dock leaves an efficacious remedy. Miss Bingley, Mr. Perkins, the match is yours. Congratulations. Miss Bray, good morning.
Wood bowed coldly to Eunice and then stalked away towards the clubhouse. Eunice was spellbound as she watched him go. Her wrath at the kicking of her brother had died away, and she wished she'd thought of doing it herself. Now, how splendid he looked, she felt, as she watched Ramsden Wood striding up the slope, reminding her of Carruthers' Moordyke after he'd flung Ermyntrude Venstone from him in Chapter 9 of Grey Eyes That Gleam. And suddenly, Ramsden seemed to combine the outstanding characteristics of Heathcliff, a wild cat, and the second mate of a tramp steamer. Wood, of course, knew nothing of this. He only knew that he'd lost his temper and the match, and as he sat in his study that evening, he reflected that he'd blown his chance of winning the only girl he wanted. She would never forgive his brutality. He groaned and tried to forget by forcing himself to read, but the words of the greatest writers failed to grip him. Varden's masterpiece, The Science of Golf, swam before his eyes. He found solace neither in Braid's on the pivot or in Duncan's on the divot. And then the phone rang.
Hello?
Is that you, Mr. Wood? This is Eunice Bray. I've just remembered. Weren't we talking about something last night? Didn't you ask me to marry you or something? I know it was something. Hello? Are you there? You did propose to me, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
We didn't actually settle anything, did we?
Pardon?
I mean, we sort of left it kind of open. Well, would it bore you awfully to come round now and go on talking it over? We should be quite alone. Wilberforce has gone to bed with a headache.
I'll be over in 10 minutes.
Well, a month later, Ramsden Wood and Eunice Bray were married, and I'm pleased to say, seem to have lived happily ever after, together with their 6 children. Oh,
very interesting, but didn't Wood get tongue-tied again at home, away from the links? That wouldn't have pleased her.
Now that's where, for once, he was rather clever. He kept a ball and a club in the bedroom, and did a few tricky putts every time he needed to feel masterful. Now, excuse me, my boy. I want to go and speak to the secretary about my caricature on the wall. I notice it's offended one or two people.
Listen to the tale of a stalwart male who lost his well-known nanny. Donald was his name, and golf was the game that made him gray like his Grammy. He practiced much, but his style was such that his handicap stayed at 30. All the words he...
The Rough Stuff was narrated by Maurice Denham in the role of the oldest member. Ramsden Wood was played by Robert Bathurst. Eunice by Susie Aitchison. Hobbs by Julian Dutton. And Wilberforce by Barrymore Phillips. The Oldest Member is adapted by Edward Taylor and Michael Poynton from stories by P.G. Woodhouse and produced by Edward Taylor.
I swear then to weep where the sand is deep till I want to murder my neighbor.